This week, unbelievable news. Freemasonry loses a giant. Then we hear about the world tree of Freemasonry. Then finally, worshipful brother Patrick Day gives us the origins of Saint Nick. Or is it Santa Claus? Or Saint Nicholas? Or just Nick? Find out. All this and more coming right up.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 575. Many thanks to our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners of the show for bringing us quality Masonic education since July of 2011. Now, we didn't always have some way to have the show listener-funded. In fact, for the first few years, it was all out of pocket. However, as we became a trusted and leading source for quality Masonic education that we could all use, whether it was listening to the podcast or using the resources that the podcast produced, we've helped turn the tide in this fraternity, and we've helped many of brothers refocus on making good men better through quality and trusted Masonic education. So again, our thanks goes out to those individuals who make this show possible. If you're curious on how you can help the WCY podcast, head on over to the website, wcypodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out the different options. We do also have a shop where we've got curated items that I personally put together and make, and we've also got a bookstore with Amazon links back to books that were written by people on the show or are recommendations from those same guests. As you heard at the top of the program, we've got a great one for you. But first, we have some news, and we won't spend a lot of time on this, but I think we need to address something that recently happened. On Sunday, December 18th, illustrious brother Chris Hodapp posted on his blog as the news made its way throughout the world. And I'll just read it from his website here. He says, Freemasonry has lost another of our legendary giants. Word has come today that illustrious Rex R. Hutchins, 33rd degree, past Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of Arizona in 2006, and author of A Bridge to Light, has passed away. He says, I first met Rex in person back in 2010 at the Rocky Mountain Masonic Conference in Albuquerque, when Art De Hoyos, Rex, and I were the speakers for the program. You can see from this group photo of the three of us that I was at least allowed to be in the same room with this powerhouse pair of brain boxes. Now, the photo he shared, of course, is a great picture of Art with a smile and Rex looking at the camera, and at a separate table way off in the back is illustrious Brother Chris. Brother Chris continues by saying, Rex's reputation for speaking exactly what was on his mind was well-deserved. After my presentation, he observed, well, I guess you really aren't a dumbass after all. End quote. Praise indeed from Rex. I have no obituary or details of funeral arrangements yet, but I will attempt to update this post as I receive them. I'm guessing Monday at the soonest when businesses reopen. We are currently sitting in Shamrock, Texas, with spotty internet access as we head for our annual Christmas gathering in Southern California, but I'll post details as soon as possible. His column is broken, and his brethren mourn. Well, those are the details. I know Rex is a wonderful Masonic author, past Grand Master, as he mentioned in this post. Make sure you head on over to freemasonsfordummies.blogspot.com. I'll link back to this so that you can refer back to it as Chris perhaps updates this particular post and continues to post other great things. Now, Rex Hutchins, what a guy. I never got to meet Rex. There were several occasions where I had reached out to him to come and speak for various Masonic things that we were doing, or perhaps I was going to be somewhere where he was going to be, but he ended up not being able to be there for whatever reason. And I know his health in the past few years has not been the greatest. I think many people were sadly waiting for this day, hoping it would never come. But the news did in fact break that he passed away on Sunday morning, on December 18th, I believe. And so we are recording this episode a little bit late due to this news and some other family things that have come up around the holidays here. I'm in full production mode doing, everyday carry leather items and things for friends, family, and orders for Christmas. So I'm a little bit busy with that as well. But the podcast must come out. So here we are, and making sure we get that done. Rex wrote A Bridge to Light, which really did replace, for the most part, Morals and Dogma as a gift from Scottish Rite Valleys to their new 32nd degree brethren, at least in the southern jurisdiction. Those books are not generally given up in the northern Masonic jurisdiction due to the massive differences in the degree structure, messaging, etc. However, for the 35 states that use the southern jurisdiction's material, I don't think there's many folks out there who haven't at least thumbed through illustrious Brother Rex Hutchins' book. I heard many a time that, he would be a great person to talk to at Masonic Week, which happens in February in Crystal City there in Virginia, that he was just an all-around really cool guy. And so for the lot of us who have never got to meet him, unfortunately, we will live vicariously and mourn through the stories told by his closest friends and brothers that are sure to come out over the coming weeks. So, Brother Rex Hutchins, we owe you a moment of silence. Also in the news, the Lyceum, Illinois Grand Lodge Masonic Education Committee's publication for Masonic Education, is running a little behind. Why? Well, it's because I put that together also. And I've been really busy, and my co-editor-in-chief, Brother Darren A. Laners, has provided a wonderful curated selection of awesome articles, including a sweet article, a how-to guide to Masonic education that I think is right up there. It's super honest. It is not a back-padding piece or anything else like that. It's really great advice on how to get things moving. Perhaps no other email question comes to myself, to Darren, to Todd Creason, to Greg Knott, all these people over at the Midnight Freemasons. No other email topic comes up more than this one thing. How can I start Masonic education at my lodge? We used to get this question multiple times a week, so much so that we almost had a canned response. Well, as more and more brothers began to realize that the power was in their hands, right? Not unlike Masonic education. I have the power. He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, you have the power. Not to be super cheesy, but I'm a huge Masters fan. But that is neither here nor there. So look forward to the Lyceum coming out soon. We just have to finish it up, send it over to Darren for a final check, and then off to our committee chair, worshipful Brother Mike Overturf, and then up to the Grand Master for his final approval. I know it sounds like a lot, but Grand Lodge of Illinois is pretty email proficient. We get a lot done, so hoping that comes out before January, but going to be some lag there. So you might get two issues in January if it comes out a little late, and that'll be okay. A little two for one. Last week, worshipful Brother Patrick Day gave us the history of the Christmas tree, and it was a wonderful history of the Christmas tree and all of the really interesting elements throughout time that come together to give us the modern iteration of what we now use. Now, something I think we've talked about Yggdrasil before in its relation to perhaps an archetype of Christmas trees, but posted this last July by Christine Wilson Slack was a post on Yggdrasil and its symbolism, and in perhaps a loosely connected string to worshipful Brother Patrick Day's piece on the Christmas tree, let's check out this piece on Yggdrasil. Humans have long fascinated with the world tree, or in Norse mythology, Yggdrasil, Old Norse, Mima Madir. In Norse mythology, the world tree is a giant ash tree supporting the universe, which is comprised of nine worlds. One of its roots extended into Niflheim, the underworld, another into Jotunheim, land of the giants, and a third into Asgard, home of the gods. In the midst of all of these were the other realms where, at least in one, humans dwelt, Midgard. Yggdrasil is mentioned in both the Prose Edda and the Poetic Edda, and its story has been recently retold beautifully by Neil Gaiman. There are dozens of myths regarding the world tree, from the northernmost reaches of the earth toward the south, where the Hindus revere Ashveta, or the Bodhi tree. The world tree, The World Tree has been closely linked to the Tree of Life, and in some cultures, the two may be one and the same. The World Tree, throughout the millennia, has housed realms of beings, larger-than-life creatures, sacred knowledge, springs and founts of wisdom, and the life of the universe. In most of these myths, the roots reach the underworld and the branches the heights of heaven. In one reference, the tree's branches reach into earth, and the roots rise toward heaven. One often involved in these myths are snakes, women, or others who need rescuing, and the hero who must reach the top of the tree, either to kill the snake, save the needy, or learn a piece of hidden knowledge from the mythical creature. The snake may be a large snake or even a dragon, such as Nidhoggr, who gnaws at the roots of Yggdrasil. What is interesting to me is that in most of these stories, the tree is the source of universal life, or the home of the worlds and regions far more numerous than our own. Trees have their own ways of communication via mycorrhizal networks, and communicate often. They rely on other species of trees to provide information and, in some cases, security and wisdom. They feel and think, albeit not like humans, of course. The tree has been the source of life here on Earth, and it stands to reason that it is a symbol for all universal life. As above, so below. Maybe? The Tree of Freemasonry. What? The curious Freemason asks. Has this to do with Freemasonry? In the first instance, it is a symbol of something, and we Freemasons enjoy a good romp through symbol dissection. Second, Freemasons have their own tree, and it is interesting, the symbolism that coincides and collides when we look at the two motifs. The Tree of Freemasonry is the Acacia, Western, or in Latin, Acacia vera, or Acacia tortilis. The tree is an evergreen tree, common in warmer climates and is found in Africa, the Middle East, and other temperate climates. The tree's wood is used to build weapons and furniture, and its resin is used in incense and perfumes. Biblically, it is referred to as the Shittah tree, and was the wood Moses used to build the Ark of the Covenant, and it was used in the construction of the tabernacle. While it has many practical uses, I see there is one reason. It is such a symbol of immortality. It is an evergreen. This may seem like a simple fact to the majority of the people that live in the Northern Hemisphere. In the Americas and Northern Europe, you can't travel for any length without seeing or being in a forest of evergreen trees. But in arid and desert landscapes, evergreen trees are far rarer. The desert evergreen has to pace itself. It has to be strong and flexible. It provides hope, where life is literally a drop of water away. Is the acacia the World Tree of Freemasonry? Perhaps, according to the Grand Lodge of Ohio. Quote, like the ancient Egyptians and Israelites, the sprig of acacia primarily symbolizes the immortality of the soul. The evergreen quality of the tree reflects the human spirit, the immortal part of us, which can never die. End quote. The Grand Lodge of Ohio. The idea is that the human spirit never dies, and in the everlasting life continues to feed the tree of humanity, a world tree. It is different in the aspect that it does not identify a cosmology of the world in the details of something like Yggdrasil. However, it simplifies the cosmology down to a simple concept. We are all one, and we are eternal. Christine Wilson Slack, July 18th, 2022. 2022. Well, there you have this cool look at the World Tree of Freemasonry, perhaps the Acacia Tree. Those of you out there who are parts of the Knights and Squires over at TMR likely got a Christmas card that we designed, which instead of having a Christmas tree on the front, has an acacia tree. My question for the Craftsman Plus is that I would love to know if you know of any other traditions that utilize a tree is a symbol for life. Perhaps there is a specific place in some Western European country that a tree is considered a tree of life, or some other great tree mythology. If you watched Avatar, you no doubt remember the scene of the great tree there, a pretty fantastic image that they portrayed. Anyway, I look forward to checking out some of the responses and taking part in the conversation. Next up, let's get into this final segment of Christmas Myths with worshipful brother Patrick Day.
In a digital landscape filled with historical inaccuracy, out-of-context quotes on memes and soundbites, there is an epidemic of fraternal occult, mythological, and historical misinformation. It's time to set the record straight. Masonic Mythbusters with Patrick Day.
And now, part four of Christmas Myths to Bust. You know, sometimes these memes, or whatever that neo-pagan heathen friend of yours is saying, is kind of right. And sometimes it's weirder than that. A great example is Santa. You may have been told that Santa on a sleigh, drawn by reindeer, is derived from the Nordic pagan Wild Hunt, led by Odin. Yeah, that's actually right. I'm not actually going to bust the myth here, I'm going to confirm it. And I am thoroughly convinced that Santa and his reindeer flying through the sky is ultimately rooted in the phenomenon of the Wild Hunt, a ghostly procession of spirits in the sky, usually on horseback, or sometimes they're just running. The motif of the Wild Hunt is almost universal, so much so that it has its own index number in Stith Thompson's Motif Index of Folklore, number E501. E is for the dead, and then type 501. Awesome. You probably are already familiar with such a motif. Do you like country music? I know Robert doesn't, but I do. Stan Jones's Ghost Rider in the Sky, a cowboy legend, which was popularly covered by Johnny Cash, Vaughn Monroe, Bing Crosby, and others. It's a great song. The narrative of the song is of a cowboy who sees devilish cattle stampeding across the sky, being chased by the ghosts of cowboys who are damned to chase the devil's cattle for eternity. One of the damned cowboys tells this cowboy to shape up or be doomed to join them forever. Do you like heavy metal? Because I do. Motorhead's Iron Fist is a great example. Flying horses don't make a sound. Flying hooves don't touch the ground. Moon eclipse and you know why. Ghost Rider in the Sky. Tone it down a bit, Patrick. Do you like the Doors? Yeah, Riders on the Storm is exactly that. Now, Stan Jones actually explains where he got the idea for his song Ghost Rider in the Sky. He says some elder indigenous American, probably Apache, in the town he was living in Arizona, told him that when they die, their spirits ascend into the skies and float around up there. And if you look, you might just see them fluttering in the wind. He was told this when he was a child, and it eventually transformed into cowboys chasing the devil's cattle. He would put it to the lyrics to the tune of a Civil War song, which may have been the impetus for a similarity to the Wild Hunt. So while not exactly mythologically the Nordic Wild Hunt, it is certainly of the same archetype or motif. It doesn't really need to have a genealogical connection to be valid as being part of the same motif, hence Thompson's Folklore Index. However, there are elements of the Wild Hunt that are particularly diabolical that apply not just to Stan Jones and Motorhead, but we'll return to the diabolical, you know, sort of side of the Wild Hunt, and we'll touch on it here and there. Now, the motif of the Wild Hunt is largely derived from Germanic and Norse mythos and folklore, as first outlined by Jakob Grimm in his fairy tales. It is usually a chase or a hunt across the sky, typically by spirits, demons, and or gods. The leader of the hunt is most typically Odin or Wotan, though there are variations that will place Hel, the goddess of the Norse underworld, at the helm, Others place goddesses such as Hulda or Freya at the lead. And other places place the Austrian Alpine goddess, Perchta, at the front. And still other folk traditions place Krampus, the devilish counterpart to Santa Claus, as the lead. There are a lot of similarities between Santa Claus and some of these characters. Krampus Nacht, which is December 5th, my birthday. Krampus is the character that punishes bad children by leaving them coal and switches and even kidnapping and eating them in some folklore, but usually he's just going around scaring them. Visits from Krampus are said to happen on my birthday, while St. Nicholas comes the next night, December 6th. As this is purportedly the day St. Nicholas died, and therefore is celebrated as his feast day. Something like Krampus has been featured in winter celebrations since probably the 7th century, at least. Continuing today in Austria is the tradition of Krampuslauf, where usually men dressed in devilish costumes parade around town scaring people. These devilish costumes are quite impressive, with this bestial fur and horns and horrid-looking faces. This is very similar to another Austrian festival called Perchten, where bestial, demonic-looking costumes are adorned and paraded around town. I've always wanted to go to one of these, as the costumes are really quality and impressively scary. The Perchten celebration is derived from celebrations to the Eastern European Alpine goddess Perchta, or Berchta, which would be anglicized as Bertha. In Eastern Germany and Austria, Christian folklore, and yes, Christian folklore, as she would pass from pagan veneration into Christian folklore. This would say that she roams the countryside between Christmas and Epiphany, seeing whether children had been nice, or if anyone has eaten anything besides fish and gruel on her feast day, which is usually Epiphany. Establishing her feast day as Epiphany is based on saints that are similar to Perchta, whose feast day is on or around Epiphany. Now, if kids had been naughty, she will cut open their bellies and fill them with straw. And if they've been good, she gives them money. Sound familiar? Yeah, this is Santa Claus in much earlier traditions. Perchta is an earlier form of the rewarding the good and punishing the bad, and her bestial winter festival being similar in form to Krampus winter festivals. We will get into old St. Nicholas in a moment, but just as Krampus is the punishment counterpart to Santa Claus, so too does St. Nicholas have a counterpart. Nekt Rupert, or Rupert the Helper, or Rupert the Servant, Rupert the Farmhand. There's a few ways to translate his name. He was part of an entourage of St. Nick's. So where St. Nick was rewarding the good children, so did Rupert and the others punish the naughty children. Jakob Grimm would associate Rupert and the others of St. Nicholas's entourage with elves. Owing to elves being, mischievous and even malicious, so Rupert Krampus may very well be an old manifestation of Santa's helpers, the elves. Interestingly, Rupert has some devilish characteristics that carry in certain folklore motifs. For one, he is said to walk with a limp. Perchta also walks with a limp, or at least is described as having one large foot, or the foot of a goose. This carries in certain folklore motifs of the devil walking with a limp, which is because he injured his leg in his fall from heaven. Kind of similar to Hephaestus, the Greek metalworking craftsman god, when he was thrown from Mount Olympus. Another reason is that the devil still had one goat hoof, so his gait is therefore awkward when he walks. If you've ever seen Robert Eggers' film The Witch, when Tomlinson bargains with Black Phillip, you will see one goat hoof step into view, followed by a shod human foot, thus playing into this devilish motif and folklore of the devil walking with a limp. Grimm would interpret this to mean that the devil and Percha were also shapeshifters. Interestingly enough, Rupert is a German folk name for the devil. Now, take that further. We've all heard the appellation of Old Saint Nick for Santa Claus. Well, in a lot of American folklore, the devil is frequently called Old Nick. You know, drop the saint part, you have an old folklore name for the devil. This is likely due to German Deutsch traditions coming over to America via the Pennsylvania Dutch. This may be the point where Krampus and Santa start to syncretize, where Krampus starts to fade away and Santa takes on both characteristics of rewarder and punisher. Somewhat diabolical background for Santa really isn't that far-fetched. As we should all know, Santa Claus, sometimes called Saint Nicholas, is based on the 3rd century Saint Nicholas of Myra. Saint Nick is Greek, and veneration of him began to spread north into Macedonia, then further on up into Hungary, and then on into Austria and Bavaria. Syncretizing with pagan traditions there and along the way. However, a lot of these folk tales about Saint Nick are of much later origin, sometimes centuries later. But there is a curious thing about Saint Nick that appears to be fabricated or syncretized from other sources that led common folk to associate him with characters like Percha, Odin, Krampus, etc. Namely, that Saint Nick is purportedly a necromancer. Saint Nick lived in a tumultuous time in the Roman Empire. Barbarian invasions become more frequent. The western part of the empire is collapsing, with the two parts splitting in 330 CE. Famine became more common. And one of the tales around Saint Nick tells of a famine in Myra, in which a butcher was desperate, so he kidnapped and killed 3 children, and then pickled them, hoping to sell them off as ham. Saint Nicholas knew what the butcher had done, and by the sign of the cross, resurrected the children. Now, this story is developed much later, but it was very popular in the Middle Ages, and thus, tales of Saint Nick began to circulate in great popularity throughout Austria and Germany, starting in roughly the 11th century. So why am I and others convinced Santa Claus and his reindeer flying through the winter skies is derived from the Wild Hunt? It isn't just the similarities of Santa Claus with Wotan riding through the skies of winter, terrifying townsfolk, or similarities of this wild hunt with Percha or Krampus. It is also the closeness in time these traditions and folklore circulate. A key indication that there is unlikely to be a genealogical connection between certain myths and symbols is due to the immense span of time between similar things. Yet, we see all these traditions circulating and crossing over into each other in various discernible ways that the genealogy can be practically mapped. We see the Wild Hunt led by Odin passing into being led by Percha, then Percha passing into Christian folklore in Austria. We see St. Nicholas veneration moving north and syncretizing with Percha and Krampus, etc. All this is happening over a few centuries, but distinct interims in close proximity chronologically to be quite convincing. One notable custom that develops throughout the 8th to 15th centuries, probably much longer in northern Germany and Scandinavia, is that of the Oscorei. This is a folk Okay, it's kind of a full corruption of a term that just translated as Riders of Asgard. But the term Oscarei itself would develop the folk etymology of being the noisy riders or the terrible riders. This was a tradition that developed amongst Nordic youths who would disguise themselves, wearing masks or covering their faces, disguising their voices as they would tear ass on horses through the countryside, terrifying small settlements and farms during the dark winter. Basically, they would show up making a bunch of noise, drink all the Yule ale and mead, and then take a bunch of food. And if the homeowners did not oblige them, the Oscarei would burn down their barn and steal their horses and cattle. The tradition carried on long enough that farmers began to leave the Oscarei beer and food on their doorstep. And if they accepted the offering, then the farm was blessed for the year. Kind of like leaving Santa milk and cookies. If you've heard about Mary Lloyd, the Welsh custom of an adorned horse skull arriving at your door, asking in song and rhyme to come in, and then the homeowner must respond back in song and rhyme. If the homeowner wins this rap battle, Mary Lloyd has to leave, and if they lose, the person bearing the horse skull comes inside and eats your food and drinks your alcohol. This is very likely connected to the Oscarei. And the tradition continued somewhat well into the 1990s when a bunch of outcast teenagers in Norway started the black metal movement. They would disguise their voices and faces and adopt fake names and play loud dissonant music. And they would terrorize Norway with a rash of church burnings and murders. As a general note, given the opportunity to bring up black metal, I will. As should be obvious, we see old pagan customs from pre-Christian Alps, Germania, and Nordland passing on and syncretizing with Christian personages and customs. And this is happening in a steady progression that it can practically be mapped over several centuries. The customs and characters merge and meld steadily, and some of these customs still being observed today as Mary Lloyd, Perchgen, etc. But they all have traversed immense oceans of time, mingling and syncretizing to become Santa Claus today. So yes, I emphatically agree. Santa Claus and his reindeer flying across the winter skies is absolutely based in the old Nordic pagan myth of the wild hunt.
All right, Brother Patrick Day, bringing the goods again, this time convincing me that, yeah, maybe it is all about the wild hunt. What a really cool and awesome story. He is right. I am not a fan of country music per se, and I do enjoy my heavy metal. But I also enjoy a lot of other music. Most people never even guess what my favorite music is. As we wrap this week up, I wanted to say thank you so much for everyone out there who sent in those essays, which I did not expect so many people to write in. Very cool. I'm in the midst of picking a winner, and all of them have been very awesome. So if you sent one in, literally, I read it. And congratulations on what a great piece of writing that you all have put together. A lot of people chose truth, which I think might have been the easiest to pick, but maybe the hardest to define. So this was a really interesting thing that happened. But in any case, I'll be reaching out to the winner and hopefully reading their piece, special Christmas episode next week. So we'll only be going dark, I guess, once this year, officially. For those of you out there looking for some tarot content, I was going to put it in this episode, but we were running a little bit short on time, and so we will make up for that. Check me out over at The Wizard of Arge on TikTok, and we'll be reviewing probably the Golden Tarot and this other really cool tarot deck that I got for my birthday this year. So anyway, that's it for this week. I want to thank everyone out there for listening. I want to thank the contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners of the show for bringing this awesome episode to all of us and to be able to keep bringing the show to you all the time and making sure that all of the past episodes are there for you to download. There's no exclusive backlog for just certain people or anything. All episodes available all the time, YouTube or on a podcast. Again, thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you all very soon. I hope you have an awesome holiday season, no matter what you celebrate. Hanukkah, Diwali, Christmas, whatever the case is, the Yule. I hope it's an awesome one. So thanks so much. We'll talk to you all soon. Until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
That's it. Hey, girl.